ESPN College Football Podcast.
Big Ten East trick-or-treating starts this weekend. Who will be left holding the Charlie Brown rock and mullen and the need for a very strong cocktail this weekend in Jacksonville? This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, October 26th. Reese Davis and David Pollack with you as we always are on Tuesdays. We briefly look back before we turn the page. David almost had the worst upset in the history of college football. If Kansas had beaten Oklahoma, wow, that would have been the worst. That would have been the biggest upset of all time, in my judgment, and the worst loss in the history of the sport.
Whoa, that's bigger than Stanford, USC?
Yes, because really? Stanford was on the uptick. I knew you were coming with that. Stanford, maybe not at that moment, but Harbaugh was building something, and maybe Lance Leipold will too. But I had the feeling that something was, you know, you sort of felt like you believed in Harbaugh because of his pedigree. And now you could say the same about Leipold. But
such revisionist
Kansas.
History.
It's Kansas.
Oh, you
it's
looked at the
Kansas,
future,
man.
You looked at the future. You can't do that after the game. That's
it was awful. It was awful. But to go in there, one win team, 38-point favorite, that would have been. But they didn't, and that's to their credit. They almost were unmasked before Halloween got here.
Almost.
I think probably what I should start with this week, Davey, is an apology. This week's burned popcorn smell. You know, the popcorn smell that you can't get the stench out. You know, how many times do you put popcorn in the microwave and it comes to an end? You push the popcorn button, it's finished. You think there are probably a few more kernels in there. I'm going to try to cook it some more, even though you know better.
Don't do it.
That's what I did. And I stunk up the entire house. On College game day Saturday morning, I said that I thought Purdue would go to the Big Ten championship game. Perhaps I was intoxicated by the win over Iowa, the fact that I do believe that George Karlaftis and David Bell are among the best players in the country. But I've been doing this a long time, David. College football has been part of my life for as long as I can remember. I've covered the sport for 30 years. I worked in the studio for ESPN for more than 16 years, the command center of the day, and then College game day the last seven. I know better. I know better than to just cavalierly ignore Purdue's Purdueiness. There's a Purdueiness that even if you have great players and you've got a good coach, that you don't just erase with one win at Iowa. There is still the per-don't, the per-doesn't in Purdue. And 1 week, maybe someday they'll eliminate the Purdueiness. But I didn't take the popcorn out of the microwave. And for that, I unreservedly apologize. And it was in no way fair comment to say that Purdue would go to the Big Ten championship
game. If you've been listening to the podcast, first of all, thank you. You know, do all that rate, subscribe, whatever that crap is people are supposed to do. But I would just like to point out that this is utterly amazing that Senator Davis comes on and starts with a rant and just lost the state. Like, the state is officially gone. Senator Davis said, not ungood, he dropped a per don't. He basically said, you suck. That's what he said. This past week, you sucked. You didn't bring your A game. I love it. Reese Davis for president.
Wisconsin threw 8 passes and beat them. How?
Mertz went 5 for 8 for 52 yards.
You know what?
The receiver had 2 catches for 20-something yards, and you smash him by 17 or 20. Whatever. I mean, unbelievable.
That's what I'm talking about, David. When we use the overused phrase, change the culture, and Brom's been there a few years, and I think he's a good coach, and I think they have good players, and they have a chance to improve. But there are some things. Sometimes you got to learn how to handle a big win and not come back with a 5 turnover day and let somebody beat you by throwing 8 passes. And you leave dudes like me sitting there with a bag full of burned popcorn in a stunk up house. Yep. You know, that's the way it goes. I also owe you a quick apology. I'm sorry for implying that you didn't know who Jackson Pollock was on College game day. I know that you're a refined and cultured man. And though it
was
not
a sincere apology, or is that tongue in cheek?
No, it's actually sincere, because I don't let you fool the people about your intellect. I know how smart you are. You try to play this, oh, I'm just a defensive lineman. I know better because I know you. But because we like to take people behind the scenes, let's just say that you paid me back silently, but boy, did you pay me back.
He dropped a comment. I dropped him a present.
Boy, did you pay me back. And I am very sorry for that. You know, the one thing you'll like this too, David, from last week. And I'm in a good mood. I promise I am. But I warned you when you called out Miami quarterback Van Dyke that there was the opportunity for some wolf packing. You know,
yep.
Wolf packing is the new Clemsoning. It's the ability to be in a sea of prosperity and find the one tiny little riptide of disaster and despair and swim right to it.
And that's what
North Carolina State did.
They did too. Drop passes, jumping off sides on a field goal that Miami scores a touchdown the next play. Like they blew plenty of opportunities. You're right, Wolfpacking. But what was your bowl prediction last week? Did you have one?
I did. I think it had to do with Iowa State and Oklahoma State. I probably should have studied up on that. I don't remember. I got so obsessed with my faceplant Purdue-iness that I've sort of forgotten what I said on the podcast, which is maybe fortunate for me. I can't imagine I have one that bad. You know, usually we're not turning the page yet, but I'm setting the stage to turn the page with what I've called with you. You're such an adept person to study film. You see nuances, you see it quickly. Before we turn the page, I want to set the stage for turning the page with the most important position in all of sports, and particularly important in college football, quarterback. You've broken down some film on quarterbacks and have arrived at some conclusions, have you not?
I have. And I tell you what, if this is a stock market, I'm buying all I got on Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. You're watching these guys go from being guys that you kind of didn't know a lot about, knew they were uber talented, knew they were highly recruited, to being guys that I go, yep, I'm building around that guy. I mean, Bryce Young, like he has the ability to play fast, but never in a hurry. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but if you watch him, it looks like that dude must be on the Peloton for like 7 hours a day because his heart rate never raises. He must be in the best shape of any human in the world because he is steady. He's quick with his first step. He's quick with his release. He's explosive. He could run the football a lot, but he's not going to. He's going to run the football to buy time to make plays. Bryce Young is a stock I'm buying. And CJ, man, I tell you what, he made the throw of the week over the middle last week in all of college football that I saw in between the safeties, over the linebackers. Fit it in a window, fit it in a dresser drawer, for God's sakes. I mean, it was unbelievable throw. He sees the whole entire field. He has unbelievable field vision for a guy that is just playing his first ball. And he also, you know, not only does he see it, what I like about him is he sees it and he pulls the trigger and he anticipates it. He doesn't wait for a guy to come open. A lot of guys, that takes time. Like, a lot of quarterbacks take time to improve on that. Dude, he sees it. He throws it before the guy breaks, anticipates so well. So his vision and anticipation are two things that I think separate him. But Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, stock way up, and it ain't going down. They're going to keep climbing.
I had a very good friend of mine, very astute observer of Alabama football after Bryce Young's performance on Saturday night. He texted me and he said, if not for Jalen, Tua, and Mac, he said, we would be finishing the statue of Bryce Young out in front of the president's mansion on University Drive. He said, this dude is amazing. And I do think that, you know, look, Alabama fans are happy with him, I'm sure, but I don't know that the same type of excitement because of it was there last year when they all thought he was going to beat out Mac Jones. And,
yep.
But he's spoiling them now because of what you said. He makes it, he's so smooth that he makes it look very easy. And Stroud has been sensational since taking that week off to rest his shoulder. And so right on that note, a very good place to turn the page. So let's turn the page to Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State this week, or Penn State, Ohio State, to be precise, I guess, since it's in Columbus. With what I saw last week from Penn State, there's no way. There's no way.
Shot. Done.
No shot. I mean, they couldn't stop the run against Illinois. And I do heed the admonition of my longtime colleague and partner, Lou Holtz, who always said it's a brand new team every week. And I know Penn State will play better than it did on Saturday. But what in the world makes you think they can outscore those dudes in scarlet and gray? I don't see it. I don't think they have a chance. Absent five turnovers or some bit of catastrophe, just normal games is what I mean. They don't have a chance.
Get it. Here's what I'll say from watching Ohio State. I've never seen a defense structurally change as much as I've seen Ohio State change this season. I've never seen it in my life. I've never seen a team go from being one thing to all of a sudden completely changing exactly who they are and who their principles have been. Ohio State has survived for years and years and years with bad scheme and great rushers, great corners, great players. They've been able to thrive in that. They don't have a great rusher this year. They're not great in coverage like they've been. So they have to use scheme, and they are using scheme now. And they are way more fundamentally sound. They're bringing an extra hat down to the football more. They've gone, instead of being a man-to-man team all the time, they're going to mix in different coverages. They're going to zone match more Alabama principles than we've seen them do in the past. But again, Reese, how do I judge them? What I'm watching, because I'm watching it against Boo Boo.
No, you're right.
I mean, it's Tulsa fair. And Akron and Rutgers and Maryland, like, and Indiana. I mean, that's always the hard. I don't know what I'm watching them against. I haven't seen people line up trips bunch and see how good they are and sound they are and use their principles against them and do some of those things that you've seen burn Alabama and other defenses and stacking wide receivers. So I watch the offenses they're playing and I'm like, my God, this is awful. From a personnel standpoint and from a play calling standpoint of what they're able to do. But I will say Penn State, I think Yurcich is really good. Observation about Clifford last week, I would guess at most he was 60% healthy because he was twisting the whole time. You could tell him and he wasn't himself. And here's the thing. Oh, Penn State hasn't been able to run the football since Barkley was there. You know, like they don't blow anybody off the football. They have to have his ability to run the football for that offense to click. They got speed outside, dude. 3-5-13, you know, Dotson Parker, those guys are really, really good, really sensational. But they have to have some threat of the run game with Clifford. And if he's not healthy, which I don't think he is, I'm with you. I think it's a beatdown.
You know, and the thing is, and I'm with you. I'm a fan of Mike Yurcich. I think Clifford's really good, and I agree with all those things. It almost bothered me more that Illinois, you know, sort of a one-dimensional team was able to do what they did against their defense. And I know losing Mustafer is a big deal for them, but I think that bothered me as much as anything. But there's a lot of pride on Penn State's side, and I think they'll answer the bell. I don't see how they win the game, but I think they'll play much better than they did against Illinois. And, you know, there's a thing sometimes that we underestimate. We sort of joke about it sometimes when we're doing the warmups on College game day about the, you know, the noon kick. We used to, you know, joke about, you know, the Daves calling the game or, you know, Mike Hogwood in studio or whatever, you know, the guys who were the staples, great broadcasters and great professionals, but they always had those wacky noon kickoff games that you didn't see coming, you know, the quintessential. Sleepy. Yeah. The sleepy games. And that sort of happened to Penn State. It's one of those things. There's a such thing as momentum, a game. And I think it happened to Oklahoma too. Game starts going a certain way and it's hard to get it turned sometimes, you know? And I felt like with Clifford's injury that was really what happened to Penn State. And while I think Dotson is every bit as good as those elite guys on the other offense that he'll see Saturday night, the three receivers from Ohio State.
The quarterback and the horses.
It's going to be hard to keep up. Paul Bunyan's axe, Michigan and Michigan State. Now, this looks like one thing, you know, ground pound Michigan. Can they get enough in their passing attack? Explosive, capable from scoring from anywhere. Home run hitting Michigan State. But through your film study, you've got some questions about Michigan State, particularly up front on offense. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think their offensive line is very average. I think they've masked it really well. I tell you what, Jay Johnson's an elite play caller. I really like watching him because I think he gets a touchdown a game off of creativity. Creative play calling, does a really good job of understanding how to attack defenses. Kenneth Walker, he is dynamite. And I tell you what, I wish he would transfer again and get on a team with an offensive line because he's doing all his damage by himself. I mean, he really does. You talk about forcing missed tackles. I mean, he's as good as anybody. And just short area quickness, but Michigan State has big play capability out wide. I just question whether they can block. And here's bad news. When you got a DN tandem like Michigan that can come at you and rush the passer, that ain't good. They struggle with stunts and movement up front. Michigan will stunt. Michigan will move up front. So, listen, I think there's a reason we look at a top 10 matchup like it is and Michigan being favored by like 4.5 at Sparty. I think it shows you that, you know, Vegas thinks Michigan's a lot better. But the caveat still sticks for me. Michigan at the quarterback spot and creating – they played last week against Northwestern, by the way, without both starting guards, which I thought was very impressive. Two good players, and they still pounded Northwestern in the face. I know they can physically be good with backs and stuff like that, but I think Michigan State's defensive line is really good too, and I think they can be good enough to stop them up front and make them have to throw the football. So I could see this game being a lot more low scoring than I think people think.
And one of those defensive ends that you mentioned, Aiden Hutchinson, and so much of this is mental, and there's a lot of animosity and chippiness in this rivalry. I don't mean to suggest that it's unsportsmanlike all the time, but
you make little brother comments.
Yeah, there's the stereotypical feeling of superiority versus the, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, well, Michigan State has an inferiority complex in football. They say, you know, Michigan State thinks that the Michigan fans are snobs. And then you have a little bit of, it bleeds over in the field a little bit. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson said that watching the tape from last year made him sick to his stomach, which it probably did. A loss to a Michigan State team that really had played poorly the week before, turned the ball over, you know, 15 times or some ridiculous thing against Rutgers. So there's a little bit of that as well, but Michigan State in the last decade or so has really played well against Michigan. D'Antonio particularly had unreserved contempt, you know, for them. I mean, he wouldn't admit it, but he hated every breath they sucked into their greedy lungs. And it gave a little contempt.
I'm not sure what that means, but that's amazing.
Well, it's I mean, he
I got it. I just love unreserved contempt. Only Senator Davis would talk like that, by the way.
I mean, he just, you know, and it gave the rivalry some juice. They're 9-4 in their last 13 meetings against Michigan.
Hey, but you know what though? Like they should feel some kind of way because, you know, it all runs downhill, right? Like Ohio State looks at Michigan like that, by the way. It's kind of like, hey, it's a cute little team down the road right there, right? That's pretty good, right? That's a good outfit. Like, and then Michigan does the same thing with Michigan State. Like, hey, that's a cute little outfit. So everybody gets theirs. And then, you know, I think that when they get to the playoffs, usually Ohio State gets somebody looking down at them when they don't do well in the playoffs. So,
oh yeah. Everybody. And that's what really gives a little juice and gives a deeper level to this sport. That's a little bit different because I've heard Michigan people say it before after, you know, they lose to Ohio State again. They go, well, at least my degree's from Michigan. You know, I mean, just absolute, you know, disdain for everybody else. Can you believe that? Look, I know Michigan State in your lifetime and stretching about 15 years longer, my lifetime, hasn't always been consistently good. Do you know this will be the first time, even I, and you like to remind me, I've been around a long time. First time in my life that Michigan and Michigan State have met while both teams were ranked in the top 10.
Wow.
1964 was the last time.
That is pretty crazy.
I mean, I
just would have thought under D'Antonio that would have happened at some point.
I think Michigan didn't hold up its end of the bargain most of the time, you know, during that era. So, And this one's Paul Bunyan's, this Paul Bunyan's trophy, I guess, instead of, I might have said axe earlier, but it's Paul Bunyan's trophy. Everybody knows Minnesota and Wisconsin play for the axe, but there are a lot of trophies to keep straight in the Big Ten. So when we shake out of this, this first weekend, and everybody's going to play everybody in the Big Ten East, are we going to be sitting there with Michigan and Ohio State by the end of the night, Saturday night?
Yes.
So there you go.
You feel some kind of different, or
no? I don't.
No. I think this game could be unbelievable if Michigan State was a little better up front. I mean, they've got all the tools in that offense to be unreal. Play like they used to be the opposite. They used to be big and physical, could only run the football, and had no passing game, no quarterback, no wide receivers. And now they got plenty of wide receivers, a great running back, a good quarterback, and then all the offensive line up front. Just they struggle too much for me to bank on them.
Before we move on, two things I want to mention. First, listen to ESPN's newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk. It's led by NFL veteran analyst Marcus Spears. Swagoo, an NBA champion, and analyst Kendrick Perkins, who is terrific on the NBA draft with me, by the way. Really funny guy. New episodes every Tuesday morning. Swagoo and Perk will touch on the NFL and the NBA, their lives and their journeys, plus can't-miss conversations with the top names in sports and entertainment. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast. And watch NBA Today on ESPN, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Malika Andrews, very talented, is at the helm. She's joined by ESPN's full cast of NBA experts, insiders, reporters, and more. NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN, the app, and wherever you might listen to podcasts. So, David, what else you've been up to? The Titans, I don't remember. Did we talk last week about the comeback and the late interception that your youth team suffered?
I don't know that we played Tuesday night. So no, that we,
no, were we did. Okay. Tuesday night. We're gearing up for it. U13 team. And you kind of fell in a hole early.
We did. We got down 22 to nothing. The belief level was not high. For the kids, I did have to apologize to my wife later on because she was like, I think all that stuff that you talk about, you didn't necessarily live out the other night, baby doll. And I was like, that always stings when your wife calls you out for going ballistic, which I just told the kids. I said, listen, if you don't believe you can come back, the stands is right there. Go sit in the stands with your parents and that's fine. And we'll play with whoever believes. I was like, but we get the ball at the half, we can go score, get our 2-point conversion, kick an onside, get it, score, get a 2-point conversion. We did. 22-16. Then we forced an interception, driving in to score. We're on the fringe, take a shot. Beautiful play. 10 yards behind the DB. Quarterback slips as he throws an interception, pick six. It did get called back, but man, it was a great, great game. It was a great opportunity to show the kids like that, how much we believe in them and how much we can come back and we're resilient. But in the end, we did come up a little bit short, but they fought like heck.
You almost pulled an LC. Remember LC telling the story of he went out and said he was going to call Wayne Duke and said that who was then the commissioner of the Big Ten said Indiana wasn't going to come out for the second half.
Yep. Nope. We're good. Sorry.
And they did, but they came back and won. They came back and won that game. So, but because we share a little bit of our lives as well, one little thing that I caught during there, when your wife was admonishing you, did she actually call you baby doll during the admonishment?
No, actually I call her baby doll. I don't know why I said baby doll, but there was no admonishment. She was just like, hey, you do that podcast on parenting, right? Let's make sure we live it. And I was like, ouch. All right. So I texted the producers for my parenting podcast that I do with my pastor Jay. And I was like, all right, y'all write this down. Wife calling me out for not living up to podcasts. So we can talk about that on our next podcast. So there you go.
Isn't it great? Because every now and then, the biggest lie in television that's been said after every show I've ever done in 30 plus years in this industry. Good show. No. Isn't it nice to have someone at home that'll tell you when it's a bad show?
You dang right. We got too much of that good show crap. Yeah, I'm like, hey, if you're not going to tell me something I did. And that was the hardest thing about coming into this business, because I have to tell our producers all the time. Do you realize what I've been called throughout my life? whatever you say to me, I've had 30 things said to me way worse at a way higher pitch in a way more damning way than you could ever say it to me. Like, if you didn't like something, just tell me. So now I get to the point with, for our feedback, I'm just like, hey, what did you like? What do you want more of? Like, that's the only way you can really get feedback from a lot of the guys. Like Jimmy, I think Jimmy G will tell me, Fitting will tell me, you know, will tell me something occasionally, but I'm like, guys, y'all give me something to work on because I know good and well, I ain't got this thing figured out.
You've got the film figured out. I mean, I do the review of the show every week. There was there's an Easter egg in the review of the show this week. I'm testing everybody on the show from the review that I sent out this week.
That's what I'm talking about.
There's an Easter egg in there. We'll see. Oh, we'll see who
actually reviews it.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see who picks up on it. So let's look at the game in Jacksonville. And I think there's a potential for it to be a long, rough day in the greater Jacksonville area. And usually there's not a bad day in that area, but there could be for Florida this week. The question, Andy Staples, our friend from The Athletic, quoted an old Mississippi State article from several years ago when Dan Mullen was having to make a decision between Tyler Russell, who's the incumbent, and a young rising quarterback named Dak Prescott. And he made the change. And the week he made the change, they played against a team they were overmatched by playing LSU, and they got clobbered. But it was clear who the quarterback was going to be from that point forward. Florida may be in a similar situation with Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones. As concerning to me, or I don't know if concern is the right word, but again, I've drawn these conclusions about, you know, pretty good teams, Penn State and Florida, that I don't see how they win. Mostly because if Florida can't stop LSU from running, I don't know what in the world they're going to do with Georgia when against a Georgia team that you're not going to get many points against anyway. So, you know, on the other side of the ball, it seems like a mismatch. Am I wrong? If they change quarterbacks, does that help them at all?
Not Saturday. It doesn't help them, but maybe down the road. Anthony Richardson's clearly the future. Listen, I don't want to act like that kid's a finished product. He's not. Like, he's still learning his way. I mean, they were almost identical in the LSU game. Richardson was 10 of 19. Emory was 12 of 19. Like, both turned the ball over multiple times. Both threw a touchdown pass. Richardson threw a few more. I think first of all, he's huge. He's 6'4". He's 245, 55 pounds, whatever it is. He can run. He's not as mobile or as elusive as Emory Jones, but he is very, very elusive. Both of them have struggles in the pass game, but Anthony Richardson's, he's not a finished product. Emory Jones is a finished product. I mean, at this point in your career, Emory Jones is who he's going to be. So I think you're betting on here's what you have with Anthony Richardson, a little bit of uncertainty. Georgia doesn't know what you really want to do with him. They don't know what he does great. They don't have a bunch of tape on him. Emory Jones, they know exactly who he is and what he is. So I think AR-15 Anthony Richardson is the guy that starts and plays. And I think, you know, building for the future, listen, LSU's 4-2. Like, they're – or 4-3, excuse me.
4-3.
Yeah, they're done this year. Like, they're going to build for the future. And I think Anthony Richardson's regime will start this weekend.
I've got a couple of questions for you about Georgia not knowing what Florida wants to do on offense. Is Jordan Davis going to play?
I think so. I think he's in there.
Is Devontae Wyatt going to play?
I think he's going to play, yeah.
Is N'Kobe Dean going to play?
I think he's good, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, it doesn't matter.
Hey, I can tell you this. I can take you. You can say that with certainty, and you can say that with your chest, and you can believe it, and so does a lot of people. I'm just going to tell you this. Georgia fans, they don't believe it yet, because Georgia fans, they've lived such a long time without success. They've experienced the Falcons. They've experienced the Braves. They're like this. It's a good season, but let's put it this way. Georgia fans ain't overconfident yet. You ain't got to worry about that, because they're still like, wait a minute. Where's it coming? Where's that stumble coming? And a bye week for Florida. You know, Dan Mullen ran 667,443 wheel routes last year against them, and they all worked. Everybody's copied every day since. Dan will have something. Georgia will have to respond. It'll be – I don't know. This one doesn't feel like Penn State for me. This one feels like it'll be closer.
Well, and also this is the last stand. I mean, you're right in terms of a championship Florida's done, but this is the last chance to do something. And yeah. I do think they're talented. I do think that there will probably be some, let me put it this way, structural changes in the offseason, I would imagine, at Florida. But Mullen is a terrific offensive coach. Whatever the slightest little opening that Georgia has shown, and that hasn't been much. I was, engaging in a little hyperbole early, but whatever the little opening is, he'll find it. And he'll pick at it until Georgia is able to close it down if they're able to. So, I agree. This is Florida's last stand. So it'll be a great opportunity. I want to hit on a couple of other ones real quick. Ole Miss and Auburn, I think, is really compelling. There's backstory there. There's the vaccine mandate, and Harsin's not discussing his personal medical history. We'll find out, I guess, in December when the deadline comes, whether he's, in a Nick Rolovich situation or if this is, speculation over nothing. What we'll find out much sooner is which of those teams is still in the race for the SEC West. And Matt Corral, a lot being put on him going on the road against Auburn. What do you see in that game?
And here's what I like about Matt Corral. Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, I told you I would buy stock and it's going to go through the roof and you're going to make a lot of money. Matt Corral, if you put Stroud or Young in this system, they would have two losses already for Ole Miss. Oh, I mean, Matt Corral has to do it all. He's going to have to run the football. He's going to have to throw the football. He is the definition of a point guard. He's an explosive, twitchy point guard. Like, he literally runs the floor, runs the break. I mean, he does everything for this team. Tennessee, he ran it for 30 times when they needed to for almost 200 yards. Like, he's going to do whatever it takes, and he'll run through you. He will run through you, put his shoulder down, get up, and spit on you, for God's sake. I mean, he's just got an edge and an attitude about him that's really, really, really awesome. And I think he's going to stay in the Heisman race. Look at the run, by the way. My God, you talk about Bama, Arkansas, Tennessee, LSU. They play Auburn this week. Liberty, A&M, and then end with Mississippi State at the end of the season? Good Lord. And somebody who's asked to run the football as much as he is and do as much as he is. I mean, look at Arkansas. Just drop bombs, rush it for 100 yards. Like, he does whatever it takes, and he can adapt to whatever style it takes. But I think this will be a good game. But Ole Miss, their defense has played pretty well the last two games, by the way. I mean, they've responded pretty well since that Arkansas game when you go, this looks a lot like it did the years past, and now they've responded well the last two games.
We'll see. There's some rumbling that Auburn might not be at full strength, but these 2 weeks, Auburn has Ole Miss, they go to Texas A&M. If they could win those two, they could set up a showdown in the Iron Bowl for a trip to the SEC championship game, potentially. So we're going to know what Auburn is, at least in terms of that race, the next 2 weeks and what the pecking order is. Because I think with the way Alabama beat Ole Miss, and it was a little stark reminder Saturday night when Alabama was stumbling around a little bit against Tennessee, Ole Miss is just one more slip up from the Tide and controlling their business from going to the SEC championship game. They're tied in the loss column with them right now.
But when was the last time, Mr. Senator Davis, Mr. Host of College Game Day, that Alabama lost two games in a regular season?
19.
Okay. It's been a while.
And they lost to LSU, and and then Tua got hurt.
And before that, it was probably when you graduated high school. I mean,
it was probably McElroy's last year, I think. I mean, two games in the regular season.
You just don't see it very often from these
guys. Not very often. You're right. Not very often. Okay, let's hit on a couple of other ones real quick. Bronco Mendenhall goes back to the Pac-12 leading BYU Cougars. I know they're not really in the Pac-12, but they're 4-0 against Pac-12 teams this year. And you didn't mention Brendan Armstrong, who's throwing for 400 yards a game. This is a pretty good matchup against the Virginia team after some early losses that's recuperated a little bit and played well.
Oh, he's good, man. He's big. He's strong. You like him? Yeah. I love him. His offensive line is not good at all, and they don't run the football great, and he needs to be like a part of the run game for them to be successful. But you talk about weapons, like things he didn't have at BYU is quarterbacks, a quarterback like this that could sling it. Well, Taysom Hill was a good runner, but more importantly, the weapons at wide receiver for Virginia. I mean, you're talking about really, really good weapons to throw. So they're going to throw for 400 yards every game, for God's sakes. They just chuck the piss out of it. It's awesome.
So I know, look, we're going to see wonders from Caleb Williams again for Oklahoma against the newly coachless Texas Tech Red Raiders. Matt Wells fired Sonny Cumbie taking over there. I know he's going to be great as he always is. You've mentioned some of the other stars, but as a defensive guy, I think we mentioned Torrey Taylor in the past, the Iowa punter, but I think I might've found a punter you would like even more is because have you seen the San Diego State punter, Matt Araiza? Have you seen him?
First of all, you started off with a bad question. I don't like punters or kickers.
Yes, you do. No, you.
I want this is a punter. I want special teams out of the game of football, period. I don't.
Why? If you're a defensive guy, this dude punted a ball. This dude punted a ball that was 84 yards in the air last week.
Awesome.
He's had a longer punt. He had an 86 yarder this year.
That's great.
As a pass rusher.
Sure, it helps you, but look, you cannot begin for the life of me to ever get me to understand that I'm going to give blood, sweat, tears, bust my butt all game long, physical hand-to-hand combat, kicking the crap out of each other, and the game's decided by a guy that's been sitting over there the whole game that does nothing but kick. I'm not in.
Dudes like Araiza and Taylor make your job easier as a defender. I like to call it complimentary football, David.
Yeah, I got a compliment for you. Stop talking.
Yeah, I do. Okay, please don't retaliate against me the way you did Saturday on the show ever again.
I got plenty more where that came from, brother.
I'm afraid you do, and you get a little bit of everything here, parenting podcast.
Hey, but you know what you did
together, and you get some seventh grade humor as well.
You enabled me the right to drop a coin phrase.
Oh, that's right.
The broadcast
coin phrase. Okay, let's end with the coin phrase.
You made fun of me, which was okay because Lord knows I've been hitting the head a lot. Intelligence is not my strong suit.
Yes,
and so I got to say, hey, I know I'm a few fries short of a Happy Meal. And that was one of my coin phrases. So you actually opened up. We had no clue we were doing that, but you opened up the perfect opportunity for me to slip in a saying that somebody gave me this week. This might be the most fun I have during the week now. So when I say coin phrase, that basically means if you hashtag me with coin phrase in my social media and give me a word or a phrase to use, I'll try to slip it into the broadcast. And it's been really, really fun. I'm not going to lie.
And so as we wrap up Turn the Page Tuesday, I will leave you with this, a little coin phrase offering, if you will. Okay. In this world, there are no sides, only players. See you next week, Paul.
Out.